I have to begin somewhere. So I must say I was born in Toronto in 1903, March the 25th. My father was a university professor, but he had not wanted to be one. He had gone to Germany after a brilliant career at school and university, graduating at 19 with a BA and eloping with my mother a few months after. My grandfather didn't want him to go to Germany or even to marry at that age. He had no objection to my mother, but he didn't want my father to marry so young. However, my father went, and my grandfather relented and gave him an income of $5,000 at that time, a lot of money, and went very far. I'm speaking about 1890. It went very far in Europe. So they traveled and lived very well, ending up in Leipzig, where my father attended the university. They had an apartment and they had a maid. And they often told me stories about how they learned Yiddish. They used to go to the Yiddish theater, which was very good because Jews are good actors always. And then also they told me how people didn't know about the most ordinary things in those days. I mean, as regards bathrooms. They had a toilet in their apartment, but no bath. And so my mother said when she wanted a bath, she had to ring up the city and order one. And then the men came with a tub and a tank full of water boiling on a wagon with a fire under it. And then they put the tube up the stairs into her kitchen, which she used as a bathroom then, and filled the tub after checking the water with a thermometer and then retired. So then she took her bath. But it was such an unnerving experience, she said, that she never ordered another one. She used to do with a sponge bath or got a Zitz bath and used that and put it in the kitchen when everybody was away and the maid was in bed. So it was rather primitive in many ways. The only place there was a toilet in Leipzig, a flush toilet at that time, was in the king's palace, but nowhere else. So then my mother said it was very interesting. Otherwise, they used to go to the theater and go to the Jewish theater where they learned Yiddish, because Yiddish is a mixture of Hebrew and German. And so they got, so they could understand it quite well. Of course, Jews are the world's best actors, as evidenced by all the ones that are on the stage everywhere in the world, especially in the States, where all the movie actors nearly are Jews, or were Jews as well. So they enjoyed themselves very much, and also enjoyed doing things which were, I guess, against the general mores of the community then. My mother went out and bought a pineapple, and so she told the maid how to prepare it. But when it arrived at the table, it was boiled as a vegetable, so they couldn't eat it. And other similar things. Coffee was a great treat, and the coffee was served with a great ceremony, much as tea was in England at the same time, with special cakes and embroidered tablecloths and silver coffee pots and so on. And also the officers in those days had the right of way on the street. A civilian had to get off the pavement to let an officer pass. So that was difficult to learn, I expect, for my mother and father. But, however, they did get used to it. And after I had a brother, Julian, who was born there, but his nurse kept him out at night while she flirted with a soldier, and the baby got pneumonia. And in those days, they didn't know how to treat pneumonia. They put him in an ice bath, which killed him. So that was that. So after that, they came back to Canada. And then my father found that his father's affairs were in a bad way, and so instead of going on to be a writer, as he wished to, he became a university professor and went to Leland Cincinnati first, and where he reorganized the university system of teaching languages, and also went to Leland Stanford until my grandfather's death. Everything. All the money that came from the estate, he put back into it. And so, although his lawyers advised him to declare bankruptcy, he wouldn't. And in a few years, in about 6 or 7 years, he had paid back everything and was a relatively rich man. And then he decided to leave the university, where there was a lot of petty backbiting and envy. In fact, he heard one professor talk about him and say, "You know, Professor Davidson, it's bad enough that he's clever and a good teacher, but it's really too much that he's also a wealthy man." This shows you the atmosphere at that time, evidently, in my father's department especially, and I think it has continued until today from what I can hear. My mother and father then were able to travel more, and I, having been ill from a baby on account of having a German nurse who had poisoned me with laudanum to keep me quiet while she did embroidery. So I had to go with them because they didn't trust me with any servants. And my grandmother was living, and the house, there were maids in the house. My brother was at St. Andrews, and my sister was at a private school called Miss Veal, so they were all right to be left while I went with my parents abroad. We spent one winter in Spain and France, and I remember being in Cannes, and then again we went to Europe. This time my sister came with me, and my brother was in boarding school. So we had many trips abroad, and nearly every year. And then the year of 1913 came, the year before the war. My father saw it coming, and he was asked, as he was a champion rifle shot, he was asked to present the medals for the training corps at the university for shooting. So he did, and he told the people there who were getting the medals, "You will soon have to use your guns in earnest. There will be a war in which we will be drawn." The papers said all kinds of nasty things about my father, that he was an alarmist, and so on. Well, anyway, we went to Europe that summer, and my father took delivery of a Rolls Royce in London. We stayed at the Mandeville Hotel, and the Rolls Royce, which had been ordered before, was specially equipped for traveling, had trunks on the back, and in the spare tires there were hat boxes, and we had to have special dust coats, which we got at Dunhill's. I remember even I had a dust coat and hat and goggles, because it was a touring car, and we brought a chauffeur from Canada called Ogilvy, but he had to go to the factory at Rolls-Royce to learn how to look after a Rolls-Royce, and also he didn't know how to drive on the left. So we had to have a chauffeur in England till Ogilvy learned to drive on the left. Of course, in Europe, you drove on the right. But at that time, in 1913, you drove on the left in England, as still today. However, we had a very interesting trip and went through France and Germany and went to Hungary, where my sister had met some years before a Hungarian who was very interested in her and wanted to marry her. So his parents invited us to their estate at Csombatai, which was a very large house in an enormous park with deer, etc. He was also the mayor of Csombatai, and his name was Brenner, and the Brenner Pass had been named after them in Europe. Had a servant behind each one of us at the table. There were so many servants, there were as many servants as there were people in the family. There was Brenner Janos, the man who was keen on my sister, and then other people who were his brothers-in-law. He had two brothers-in-law, and then he had two sisters and two other brothers, and then the mother and father. And in those days, the Hungarians, the Magyars, were very funny. They wouldn't have a floor above them. Nobody could live above their heads. So it was all on one floor, an enormous place, and with corridors, and it was hard to get from one place to another. And I remember they gave us, they had no idea what we ate for breakfast, so they gave us cake and coffee and then tea and eggs, and were very anxious that we should eat the right things that we were used to. And they took us around different places and showed us the estate, which was very large, hundreds of acres, and with deer forests. And they were very hospitable and greatly approved of my sister. But then my father said my sister was too young to be officially engaged. At the time, I think she was about 14 or 15. No, she was older than that. She must have been 18. But anyway, that was that. So we left and went back to Vienna, where my father acted as a host for Canada in representing the CPR, which brought people from Canada to run a special kind of observation car, which the Austrian government had ordered from Canada. So that was very interesting, and I was the youngest person ever to go to the town hall in Vienna. I think at that time, I was very young, of course. And I remember, of course, I didn't go out anywhere because my sister was older than I, and I was only about 8, I guess, or 9, I forget which. And I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. I couldn't, because I was just a child. So I used to stay in the hotel while they went out, and a maid would keep an eye on me, and while I come in and see me while I slept. And, of course, I went to bed early. So I only remember certain things about that trip.
Because when I was
in London, where we again stayed at the Mandeville Hotel, and where a lot of English people stayed who were of the nobility, and they were very interested in us because of having a Rolls Royce. So they used to ask Ogilvy, the chauffeur, how many Rolls Royces we had at home, and he would tell them 2 or 3, which at the time was not true, but he said they were so curious he wanted to supply them with something to make them feel that they had learned something about us. And then I think at that time I remember faintly, I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, that the coronation of the king was taking place. That would be the grandfather of the present queen. It must have been King George and Queen Mary. Because I remember my father and mother going to the at Westminster Abbey. Sir Mackenzie Bowle had gotten them places in the Abbey, and I remember my sister went, but I remember my father and mother being all dressed up and going in the afternoon, it seemed to me. And I think it must have been that occasion, because it was so unusual. My father had a lot of English friends, and we used to go and see them, and my mother used to say that when she went there at night for dinner to any of them, it was so uncomfortable because they wore evening gowns and yet were so cold that the only place that was warm was near the fireplace, and everybody tried to get around it, and but everybody wasn't able to. And she said she always felt she had to have some kind of a a wrap or something to put around her, because when she got away from the fire, she froze and wasn't very comfortable. Well, we were some months, as I say, abroad, and then we came back to Canada. It must have been in September that year. That would be 1913. Then that winter, I went to Havergal, and then in the following spring, still in Havergal, and my mother wasn't well that year, and she had some... I don't know just what it was, because I was young, but I think it was something to do with the change of life. And so I was alone a lot with my sister, but my sister went to take lessons or a course in VAD, which was volunteers or nurses, I think, because by that time people started talking about the war that might occur. And that year, in September, I believe, the First World War broke out. And my sister wanted to go and work as a nurse assistant, whatever it was in those days. And my father wouldn't let her because he thought she was too young. And so she didn't go, but she did all kinds of work at home, and they did things for the war, and I don't know, all kinds of meetings of the Daughters of the Empire, and Miss Leslie Gray, who was Leslie Goodrum then, and she would be in all kinds of meetings and arrangements to make bandages, and they were busy. And then there were all kinds of parties for soldiers, officers, and my sister was engaged to a man called Captain Kidd, I remember, but then he was killed the following year in the war, and then she was engaged to another man called Reginald Tirrett, and I don't know what happened to him, but she was always jilting people, and she was considered very fascinating, but she used to get bored with her beaux and jilt them, tell them to, you know, that all was over. I don't think she ever had an engagement ring, or she may have, I don't know. But anyway, I was very interested in all this, and probably, no doubt, was a real pest and bothered her. And so I went on going to school, and then the next year after that, I remember that she met her husband, the man who became her husband, through some friends of ours. And that was, I think, not too long after we came back from Europe. No, it was after the war began. What am I thinking of? The war had already begun. And my grandmother then didn't like staying at Brookwood, so my father prepared an apartment for her at the Hampton Court Apartments on Avenue Road, which belonged to him. So I used to go in and see her quite often and stay overnight sometimes with her. And then my other grandmother, she had an apartment of her own, my grandmother Mason, my mother's mother, and I used to go and see her occasionally, but I never cared for her as much as my grandmother Davidson. I suppose because she had a good library and I was always borrowing books without her knowing it. She didn't approve of my reading everything. She thought it was not suitable for my age at all. And so she complained to my father, but he didn't say anything. He thought it was all right. He didn't stop me reading all different kinds of books. He thought it was educational. And I used to have friends in to play, I know, and we used to dress up, and it seems, I don't remember all this, but my father said that he used to see them come down sometimes crying, and he'd say, "What's the matter?" And old Marcia says, "We're too stupid to learn German." I insisted on teaching my friends German. I don't know why. But I had quite a few friends from Havergal who used to come to see me. And we had a room at the top of the house where we could find clothes to dress up in. And I suppose my mother had put things away there, all kinds of dresses and costumes. I suppose perhaps she used something in her painting. And we lived at 22 Madison Avenue, and my father had a big library, which was really the old hayloft over the stables. And between the house and the library, there was a bridge. And then the library was very large, and there were bookcases all around the sides of it. And then in front of the fireplace, it was a nice fireplace, there were sofas, built-in sofas. And then I used to love to run down this bridge because it was slanted, and there were fireproof doors at either end of metal. So I used to get my old doll's carriage and sit in it and run down, slide down, hit the door at the bottom end, which
which was, I don't think, a good idea, but I don't think my father, after Vicky, forbade me to do it. I was denting the doors with this baby carriage, because it was quite a strong carriage and very large for a doll's carriage, very solid for me. And one time we had a fire in the building, in the library. My father and mother were away, and I don't know what happened, but something caught in the fireplace, and the chimney went on fire. But, and the fireman came to put it out, and there was so much water that it froze. So the whole back garden and driveway, you could see it was solid ice, and the firemen kept falling, slipping when they arrived. But they put it out. Really, the cook had put it out. She got on top of the bridge and got blankets, wet blankets and water, and put the on top of the chimney, and it put the fire out. So that was the end of that. And I never forgot the firemen falling all over the place, which I thought, of course, was very funny. I don't suppose it was for the firemen. Sure. And then I used to have my friend Lorna Walbridge next door. That is, not all the time. She used to come and stay with her grandmother. And she was a great friend of mine.
Was a great friend of mine, and always had a lovely sense of humor, a lovely sense of fun. But her grandmother didn't appreciate it, because we had a pulley between the buildings, and I used to pass a basket over full of apples and other things, and she would eat the green apples, which disagreed with her and would be ill. And then her grandmother forbade us, complained to my father, and forbade us to have this system any longer. For some reason, the green apples didn't make me ill, and although I was so delicate, supposedly. So I don't really know how it happened that Morna always got sick. She is still my great friend, and still alive, happily, and lives now in Rhinebeck, after living most of her life in the States, where she married an American, and she has two sons, and she is about my age, about 2 months older, 3 months, not much, and always full of fun and gay. A very nice person. We had many funny times together and enjoyed ourselves very much. Her grandmother was exceedingly old-fashioned and acted as though she still lived in the time of Queen Victoria. I never forgot when she gave a dance for Morna when she was 18, and it was very nicely arranged, and Morna had a lovely dress and so on, but the boys had to go in the smoking room to smoke. You weren't allowed to smoke in the rest of the house. Of course, that was a habit in the Victorian days, and now I understand it. Everybody's going back to it. I myself don't like the smell of smoke. So I expect it is what you get used to. But really, after my stay in the hospital in a room with a woman who smoked all the time, I had semi-private coverage, as in St. Joseph's Hospital this last time when I broke my ankle. There were no single rooms, so I had to suffer. And now it put me off smoking, so I guess there's something in having a smoking room a la Queen Victoria, where you don't do anything but smoke. And there's not much conversation or anything, so I suppose it puts you off in the end. Perhaps it's a good idea. His father was the son of the first geologist educated in Canada, who was very good. And Morna herself wanted to go in for geology, but her parents didn't want her to. And so in order to get away from rather an oppressive family atmosphere, she went to the Toronto General and learned to be a nurse. In those days, when she learned, it really meant something. You had to do everything. You had to wash floors, sterilize equipment, do anything that you were told to do, not like today. And as a result, Canadian nurses were known the world over as being thoroughly trained, not only in theory of nursing, but in the practical side, which today they evidently are not, as far as I can make out. since my experience at St. Joseph's. But anyway, to return to my family, my father's people had come originally from Hawkwhistle in Northumberland, but they are of Scottish descent. And my great-grandfather came to Canada. He rented a sailing ship to come, and he was very much against the system in England, the government and the religious system, and I presume the class system. He ran a school in England. He was a schoolmaster and well-educated for those days. I mean, he knew Greek and Latin. And so he decided that Canada was the place for his young family to be different and to escape from the, I presume, the conditions that were then prevalent in England. So he came to Canada, and he bought land near Burlington and several hundred acres, and he built a very nice house, which I believe still stands. It was stone. My daughter saw it when it was still there. It is now in a clover leaf between the Queenie and the Burlington or Bronte side road, I expect. And he lived there, and he spent his time writing Greek and Latin poetry, which wasn't much help to his family. And so then he had to, in the end, he had quite a large family, but he had so many who died. The child mortality was terrific in those days. And in the end, he hadn't much left of his original capital, but he had $1,000, which he gave to my grandfather, Joseph Davidson, and said, the capital is nearly gone, and you'd better go and do something about making some money, which my grandfather did. He went into lumbering business. He was only 18 or 19 at the time, and had only gone into high school, such as it was then, but he'd been taught at home quite a bit, I think. And so he made quite a success of his lumbering. He owned land all over Canada, in the west and in the east, and one of the places he owned was Camp Borden. He took all the trees off and then sold it to the government, but for very little, I believe. But he had a bit flourishing business, and he and Oliver Mowat were the ones that supplied the ties for the Canadian cross railway, which crossed our continent. And so I think he contributed quite a bit to Canada, because he was a very honorable man and very trusting. And so after my father had been born, my grandfather had a house on Spadina Road near Phoebe Street, a large red brick house with white pillars. And it took the whole block between Phoebe, and which was the street behind, and the two side streets, which I forget their names now. And he lived there with my grandmother and my uncle, who was then a bit older than my father. And my father wanted to go in to be educated to be a writer. So my grandfather agreed, but didn't think he should get married as early as he wished. He had always been in love with my mother from the time he met her. And however, he said that he asked his father if when he graduated he would provide him with an income so that he could go and study in Germany. So my grandfather said yes. And then when my father graduated from the University of Toronto, he and my mother eloped and got married at the church at the corner of Avenue Road and Bloor. And my grandfather wasn't there, but both grandmothers were. And then my grandfather came reconciled to the idea, but he still thought Freddie, as he called his son, was a bit young. But, however, he consented, and father and mother went to Europe That was, I think, in 1892. And so they went to Paris, and then they went to Leipzig, where my father attended the university. And my mother had very lovely blonde hair and was a very handsome woman. So naturally, when they stopped in Paris, she got some clothes there. And they stayed at El Lotti, which